We're going to be reading from Acts chapter 2, verses 42 to 47. This should be a passage we're all familiar with because we've been really referencing this quite a bit throughout morning services and evening services. So let me read. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. Selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone as they had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and they ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favour of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. That's the word of the Lord to us this morning. So this week, as I was going through this passage and looking at other passages, so looking at the Lord's Supper passages that we find in Scripture, it got to a stage where I was getting so immersed in it, I started to get quite deep and all sort of theological and stuff, which is great. But as I was reading through these passages, I just kept getting a scene over and over again in my head, and actually I was just thinking, do you know what, it was almost as if the Lord was saying to me, we can go deep, there's a time that we can go deep, and actually for you guys, if you are part of any discipleship groups, what we've been doing is unpacking the preach, so what I share with you this morning, you can go deeper into that within your discipleship groups. I know it is half term, but the material will still be sent out. So if you do get the material, I would just urge you to, if you want to just go deeper into some of what we've been talking about today, do have a look at it. If you're meeting up together, do use it, and you can go deep, and you can go as deep as you want to in that. But what I felt the Lord telling me all through the week was just to relay something simple to you this morning that you can just... You can imagine, you can use your imaginations to encourage one another. So I'm just going to set before you a simple scene. It's a simple scene, it's not the Last Supper, it's just a simple scene of Jesus and his disciples during just another day. Okay, just another day. So we're going to have some slides going up as we've had. So there'll be points during this that will relate actually to previous weeks, okay, because it all ties in together, this theme of family that we're speaking about. So do sort of keep your eye on those as well. But more than anything, just try and imagine this scene. I just want it to encourage you, and you take from it what you will this morning. So imagine the scene. The daylight is fading. The sun begins to settle at what ends at the end of what looks like the world, but is in fact just the Sea of Galilee. There's just enough sunlight to make out the figures of several men walking back from a day's work. At the back of the bunch, rambling along the gravel, are James and Andrew. Their feet are aching and they've slowed down to almost a snail's pace as they fall further behind the rest. It's been a long day. Philip and Thomas are about 30 yards ahead. They're shaking their heads and they're blowing out their cheeks, thinking about what they have just witnessed with the other fellas. Bartholomew, Matthew, James, son of Alphaeus, Simon and Judas, son of James, are shouting at Peter and John, who have run ahead, giving him some friendly banter about being suck-ups to their master Jesus and never wanting to be too far away from him. Of course, Peter run the race. And already at the place that they would be staying the night, helping both Marys and of course Martha getting the place prepared, is Jesus. Judas Iscariot is there, and he's close to Jesus. He was walking with him alone on the way back. They bundle into their home for the night. Judas Iscariot wondering why everybody had taken so long to join them. John gets teased for losing the race to Peter to get home. But as usual, he has a last laugh because he gets to sit next to his master and friend. Peter begins to try and hush everyone up because he wants to say something about the day they've just had. And as they all begin to quiet them, they catch Jesus just out of Peter's vision, sarcastically roll his eyes, and the place just descends into a riot of laughter. Peter, in a huff, sits down and he mumbles something under his breath. And as he does, he feels the warmth of a forearm around his chest and his neck. And he feels the breath of Jesus against his face as he hears Jesus say, "Don't worry about these guys, Peter. I love you, my friend." Peter relaxes in the arms of his master. He smiles and he looks around at all his friends, each of them giving him a look that says, "I know that feeling. That's a wonderful feeling." Mary Magdalene and Mary, the sister of Martha, as they put the jugs of water on the table, give each other a knowing glance as the men comfort each other because their long day had made their feet sore, humbly holding back the fact that they've been up since the crack of dawn and they're still going strong. Jesus washes both Marys faithfully, serving the men who had followed him all day. And he calls them over to him. He tells John and Peter to budge up and make some room. He asks Matthew to go and get Martha, who was still sweeping furiously in another room. And as she joins them, broom in hand, wiping the sweat from her brow, he motions for her to join them all. Martha reluctantly sits down and Jesus raises his hand and he quietens them. He takes some bread from the main plate. He breaks it into smaller pieces and he gets people to pass it around until everyone is served. He then gives thanks to God the Father for the day they've just had, for the food that he had provided and the women who had prepared it. And everybody begins to eat. As Peter takes a bite of the bread, he relaxes back and he flicks off his sandals. And as the first mouthful of food is chewed and swallowed, he's fueled enough to just nudge John and say, "Can you believe what happened today? Did you see the look on those guys' faces when the Lord opened that other man's eyes? It was priceless. Could you imagine if we had something that could have captured that look?" John laughs and he says they'd have to be a pretty quick artist. And they agree that they'd just have to make do with a memory. Philip passes Thomas some bread and he asks him rather sheepishly if he struggled when talking with anyone today, hoping that he wasn't the only one who at some point wanted to stop and go home. Not everyone was willing to hear what he had to say. Thomas smiled to himself and he said to Philip that he had felt the same, but that he in fact had watched Philip's perseverance in the face of what was a tough crowd at times, and he drew inspiration from it to carry on himself. Now Philip was surprised that somebody else had actually looked to him, as all he felt like he was doing all day was watching what Jesus was doing and doing his best to imitate him. Philip reclined and he wondered to himself what he would have done if Jesus wasn't with them for him to watch and imitate. But he was then hit by the fact that Thomas wasn't looking at Jesus at that point. He was looking at him. And yet he was still inspired to carry on. He wondered to himself, was his master rubbing off on him? So much so that the others began to see some of his master in him. As Philip took another mouthful, he pondered on what it would be like to not have to look at Jesus all the time for direction. And then he realised that actually he really wanted to be like his master. It seemed to him that it was his desire to be like his master because Thomas, knowingly or not, had seen something of Jesus in him and he was inspired to carry on. He began to realise that his desire to be like his master, who he loved more than anything else in the world, had in fact to began in small parts to change him into the likeness of the very person that he loved. He closed his eyes and he gave thanks to God for being the presence of his master and his friend. If only I could make a habit to do these things that he does, he says to himself. And he silently prays again, and he asks God that as long as he lives, that he would never be too far from Jesus or want to be like anyone else. James, he leans over the table to grab another bite, and he taps Matthew, who was speaking to his brother John, about how Jesus had calmed this guy down who was going crazy in the marketplace, throwing jugs around and smashing up stalls, threatening people. And he says to Matthew, "Who was that official looking guy that you were speaking to in the corner of town today? For some reason, I can't explain, I knew something wasn't right. That's why I come over to you. I'm sorry if I scared him off. Maybe he didn't like me. You know what I'm like, I can be a little abrupt at times." See, Matthew hadn't been able to explain who he was at the time, as it had all kicked off with this guy going crazy. So what he'd done was he motioned for James to hold on just a second. He walked around the table and he sat next to him. John was still amazed at the crazy guy's transformation when Jesus spoke to him, and he hadn't noticed that Matthew had got up and left him just laughing to himself. Matthew began to admit to James that he was glad that he had come over, but he didn't have time to thank him there and then. "Why the need to thank me?" James said. "Well," Matthew explained, "he's a guy I used to know. In fact, we go back quite a few years together. He's doing pretty well for himself. He lives in that part of town that we don't often get to, you know, with the big houses and the gates. He was telling me about a business that he had been running, and he was trying to get me back into the debt collection game and do some of the admin work for him, you know, not to get my hands too dirty." James gives him a look, and Matthew says, "Yeah, I admit for a while I did think back to some of the benefits that old life brought me. He was a good salesman." James looked over to Jesus, quite obviously, and then looked back to Matthew without saying a word. Matthew nodded, and he took a deep breath. "I'd taken my eyes off the master, and before I knew it, I was shuffled away from all you guys, and I was talking alone to this guy I once knew. And well, I was tempted, James, I have to tell you. Then you came over, and you put your arm around me." And that's when he made his excuses and he left. James wondered to himself where this feeling had come from, that something wasn't right with what he could see going on with Matthew and this guy. He remembered one time when Jesus had placed his arm around him, just before he was about to launch a verbal volley at his brother. It wasn't a coincidence then. Jesus knew what was about to happen. And in this moment, he realized that being around Jesus had rubbed off on him. And he too was beginning to look out for his friends like Jesus had done for him. He remembered giving in to temptation of wanting to belittle his brother in an argument about who was the greatest among them. He so desired to be the best and to get Jesus' approval that he was willing to hurt his own brother to get it. But before that desire grew into something he knew was wrong and doing some damage, Jesus came alongside him and he put his arm around him and he asked how things were going as he looked a little tense. James remembered the embarrassment of giving in to the temptation of belittling his brother to feel better about himself. And as he told Jesus this, waiting for a telling off, Jesus just stayed silent. He didn't say anything for what seemed like ages. But all the time, he kept his arm around him, pulling him in closer. He remembered feeling silly and guilty and ashamed of what he was thinking and what could have happened had he gone ahead with what he was going to say. Yet at no point did Jesus condemn him for what he said. He just listened and he allowed him to get it off his chest. Already he remembered feeling better. He couldn't remember, in fact, if Jesus had said anything to him. And in that split second of recalling that memory with Jesus, James just hugged Matthew. Matthew let out a prolonged sigh of relief. He chuckled to himself and then said thank you to James for listening and not getting angry with him. They both sat together. They looked at their master and friend Jesus, eating, talking, and laughing with the girls, plaiting Martha's hair as he did his sister's, thinking to themselves, does life get any better than this? Filling our bellies and being together in this man's presence. I hope we never forget this moment. Matthew knew inside that he couldn't take his eye off Jesus again, as he now knew the temptations that were still there if he did. And he thanked God for his friend James, and he wondered what life would be like without him and Jesus to direct them both. James offered up his own prayer to God in that moment while still hugging Matthew. And as he realised how Jesus had stopped him from hurting his brother, he asked God in prayer that his brothers would always keep watch for him, that he wouldn't be pulled into a dark corner himself and led away from his master and friend, Jesus. As Martha sat between the legs of Jesus and slowly relaxed and forgot about the chores that she had left to do, she began to reflect that everywhere else that she went, in the town, in the marketplace, in the temple, that she always knew her place. Whether she was told or whether it was implied or it was tradition, she knew where she was in the pecking order of things. Yet strangely enough, in a house mainly full of men, some of whom had been doing some amazing things with Jesus that they were all still talking about, she felt a belonging that she just couldn't explain. As much as she knew how close Jesus and John were, and how everyone, despite giving him plenty of stick, loved and respected Peter, the admiration Mary Magdalene had because of her devotion to Jesus through his brave interruption of the religious leaders, there was never a feeling that Jesus preferred any of them over anyone else. It had taken Martha a long time to realise this. And in fact, it was only herself that still at times held on to the lie that she wasn't as important to Jesus as the others. For she began to reflect as she allowed him to plait her hair that every time she was in Jesus' presence, she felt like the most valued person in the world because he always made time for her. There wasn't a moment in his presence where she ever felt that he was distancing himself from her. If anything, it was her doing the distancing by busying herself all the time when he was actually trying to get her attention. But it was these times, when she laid back in the presence of her master and friend, that she took the time to look around her at the different types of people in her company. What other person could bring together such a motley crew of people who, including herself, were of no real importance outside the walls of that house? Yet, together in his presence, seemed to have all things in common and were a pretty formidable force from what she gathered with the towels that they were sharing. If she felt this way, the others must as well, surely. There were simply no favourites in his eyes that she could see. Because as much as she felt the most valuable person in the world, the value that she felt given to her by Jesus was also put on all the others now by herself. As she looked around the room, she was overcome with love for each one of these people. Some who were laughing together, others with an arm round each other, others in deep conversation, others wiping each other's tears, and herself, well, She was just happy to sit with him and give thanks for all the others who made her life such a joy as she watched them grow together as a family. After silently giving thanks, Martha noticed that the place where Judas Iscariot was sitting was empty. Maybe he had to be somewhere important, as he did have quite a responsible role. But what a shame, she thought. What a shame that he had missed out on such a special time of fellowship together. In fact, more often than not, as she reflected further, his place was always empty once it came to breaking bread together. Oh well, she thought, I suppose what he does is important. That's the scene that I had all week going over and over in my head as I looked at the deeper things of this passage. It was a German theologian, Martin Luther, who in the 15th century wrote of communion as a sacrament of love, wherein we are joined to Christ and to our neighbours. The burdens, their sorrows, and their hopes become ours. As the disciples ate together and were joined by the women in the presence of Jesus, devoting themselves to each other, a miraculous thing began to happen. In his presence, he gave them a space to connect with each other and to relate to one another. They began to share each other's burdens, sorrows, and hopes, like Philip and Thomas. As they came together in his presence, they began to bond with one another, as they agreed that although costly to follow their master and friend, it was the only way to live. And to do it alone and remove themselves from Jesus and their family would lead to isolation and darkness, like Matthew and his temptation to turn back to his former life. Recalling his faithfulness and how he had begun to influence their thoughts and actions, they became attentive to each other's needs. The mind of Christ was beginning to direct them, like James coming to Matthew's aid. He focused their attention on him being the food they needed. And as they realised their inadequacies without him, they begin to see the needs of each other. The heart, will, and mind of Christ was being sought by each one of them. He enabled them to see what faithfulness looked like. In all the time they knew him, he didn't change. He was loyal and steadfast in his love for his father and those he now called friends. This they began to model as a family by spending much time together. Jesus had invested himself in all of them. Each of them, when they looked at Peter being held by Jesus, knew what it was like for Peter at that moment. They knew the generosity of their master and friend and began to make personal sacrifices to be together. Apart from one of them, who never stuck around fellowship with his family, but always had more important things to do. Judas Iscariot's loyalties were divided, and he found himself isolated, and ultimately, as we know, conquered. A simple meal together in the Lord's presence with the Lord's people is devoting ourselves to him and each other. It's the recipe we read together in Acts at the beginning that works against division, isolation, and being conquered. So I wonder, are we willing to submit to the will of the Father as Jesus did? Are we willing to sacrifice self for the body to thrive and enjoy the favour of all the people that we read about? By joining together in his presence through common fellowship and the communion table, do we want to see the Lord add into our number daily those being saved? If your answer is yes to those questions, then may we never stop coming together in his presence as he reveals himself to us through his body, the church.